Hey, Curiosity Builders, I'm Chris Martin, and you're listening to Getting Work to Work, a weekly podcast for creative entrepreneurs, storytellers, visionaries, and changemakers who are on a mission of chasing big ideas, telling epic stories, and leaving living legacies. Whether you're just starting out or have been at this creative and curious life for some time, I hope you'll learn something new in this podcast and find yourself inspired to break through the barriers that hold you back and keep you stuck from getting your work to work. When was the last time you played, where you lost all track of time and had so much fun you never wanted it to end? Jeff Harry is today's guest, and he gets his work to work with fun, play, mischief, and weirdness. From workshops and speaking engagements to podcast interviews and TikTok videos, Jeff not only brings an infectious spirit of joy, but also creates room for everyone else to open up as well. He goes deep into why play matters, especially for adults, why he named his inner critic, getting certified in laughter yoga, and the importance of showing up for the benefit of others. Show notes and links to all the good stuff mentioned in this episode can be found at gwtw.co/507.
Yeah, if you don't believe it and you're like, that's bullshit, then just say it. Just be like, yeah, I don't know if I believe you. Tell me more. And then nice. I'll be like, okay, ooh, I like that. I gotta figure this out.
And you can totally let the language fly, be yourself.
Sweet! Yay!
I'm not going to throw a sticker on there or anything like parental guidance suggested. Although that would be pretty funny.
That would
today's
actually
episode
be awesome.
Is brought to you by Tipper Gore.
Man, I haven't heard a Tipper Gore joke in a long time. I'm loving this. I forgot Tipper Gore existed. I was like, oh yeah. I am Jeff Harry, and I'm endlessly curious about what is going to happen in the new normal when we get back to whatever we think is normal.
Oh my gosh, I love that so much, because when I think of new normal, I think about of all the manscaping I'm going to have to do.
Oh my goodness, dude. Oh, all the people are going to be like, don't look at me. Just don't look at me. Man,
I'm hideous.
I recently made a TikTok video that was both like, ooh, I can't wait to like get out my ex, you know, and hug people and high five and go to see movies. And the other part of me is like, nah, dude, I get to wear pajamas all day. Nah, like, this is great. Why can't we just keep it like this forever? So I can't decide which one I'm leaning more towards.
What do you think the new normal will look like for you?
A lot of workshops around mental health and getting more people to connect via play. I mean, it's the theme already, right? Of just like, you know, people are like, wait a minute, what? At work, you got to focus on mental health of people? What is the shared humanity, empathy? What are these words? You know, I even hate the term emotional intelligence or EQ, because it's just like, wait, you mean the stuff we learned when we were children? Like, you know, that stuff? We're not doing enough of that stuff? Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. We should do more of that stuff. We need training around that? Really? Oh, my goodness. Okay. That's how far back we are. So I'm hoping the new normal includes shared humanity, empathy, and more understanding of one another.
Right. And I think forgiveness too, for the plentiful nose hair that we've accumulated,
exactly.
Not just from living in a global pandemic, but, you know, just age,
stress, nose hair grows longer when you're stressed. I don't know. I just made up that stat. So don't agree. Don't look that up.
Ooh, but I love that.
And I'm not touching it. I'm letting it free flow, man. Like, that's how I'm rolling.
Nice. Cause I was going to ask, trim, pluck, or braid.
None. Just free, like untamed. Let it go wild. Let it be free. Especially if you're married. I'm not married, but especially if you're married and they don't bother. That's good, man. It's like, whatever.
Nose hair to me is like a beard. It's like once it gets past a certain length, it just gets frustrating. So it's right. Like every once in a while, I have to remember a camera's on or else you'll see me like going like this. Plucking it out or something.
But it could be like your signature, like, you know, Jonathan Strahan with the gap between his teeth. It's just like, man, you know, Chris, nose hair Chris. Oh, yeah, dude, I love that man.
So, Jeff, one of the things that is so fascinating about you, apart from being willing to just spend 5 minutes joking about body hair and nose hair and all that, is that there's a phrase on your website that says the veil of BS that prevents our work from being more fulfilling, purposeful, and fun.
Yep.
What is that veil of BS?
The veil of BS, so I play for a living, right? And I inspire people to play more, but I actually believe that people are playing now at their work. They're just playing a role that they hate, right? So people are pretending, they dress up, you know, they pretend they know what they're talking about at meetings. They pretend that they, you know, that they have everything under control, and nobody does. Nobody knows what they're doing. Nobody knows, but everyone's pretending that they do. So like, I am simply lifting that veil and being like, do you want to act that way? Like, do you want to pretend to be someone that you're not, you know, for what is it? 2,500 hours a year, 50 hours, you know, 50 hours time, you know, times 50 weeks out of the year. You only have around 8,000 hours in a given year. If you're at work for 2,500 of those hours, wouldn't you want to be more of yourself? Wouldn't you want to enjoy a little bit more of it? Because right now, how's it working out for you? You hate it. So why are you doing it this way?
Ooh, I love that. And it seems like, I mean, you could take that in any direction because, you know, the veil of BS that says, oh, well, you know, I'm playing at my work. But like, whether it's your work or social media or just life in general, I mean, it seems like we're not only covered in a pretty veil of BS, but we're drowning in a sea of it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the thing is, here, I'll go in this direction. So why do adults not play enough? And my biggest answer all the time is 148,000 no's. By the time you reach the age of 18, you've heard the word no 148,000 times, according to studies. And then in addition to that, you are shit on all the time by adults, parents, aunt and uncle, you know, random school teachers, like everybody. And they're like, you should do this, you should do that, you should major in this. And you're like, I'm six. Why are you telling me what I should major in at six? Like, you're just putting all this pressure. Then you get to your teenage years and like the bombardment of social media. Oh, we didn't have to deal with it as much. And it's all of it is telling you, hey, don't be yourself. You know, buy this product. Go buy more Amazon gift stuff. Become an influencer. Do what everyone else is doing on TikTok. No wonder no one wants to play. And then anytime you try to do anything out of the ordinary, right? Like, hey, maybe I'm going to start a podcast. Hey, maybe I'll start making some videos. Hey, maybe I'll start a blog. People are like, that's stupid. You know, stop being too much, too mischievous, too weird. Why are you so weird, Chris? Why do you make a podcast? That makes no sense. Why are you still running your podcast? It's been so long. Everyone's running podcast. Why would you want to continue to run your podcast? And you're just like, dude, shut up, man. Let me do my thing instead of hating on me the whole time. So it's just like everyone is telling me, the whole society is telling you not to play and not to be yourself. So you have to fight all of that simply to just be you. And that's like what we're up against when we want to play.
Yeah. Was there a time in your life and business where you didn't abide by this desire to play and you allowed yourself to take on that veil of BS?
Oh yeah, of course. Like I remember, so I watched the movie Big as a kid. And Tom Hanks, you know, Tom Hanks, man, dance on that piano. And then he got a job working for a toy company. And I was like, wait, what? You can work and play with toys for a living? And then I went home and started writing toy companies that day in third grade. And I just kept writing them, right? And I wrote them all, you know, and I got so many rejection letters back. And then finally this one company, Cap Toys, went out of business. But they told me to go to mechanical engineering. And then I did, shouldn't have listened to them. But I went in and I eventually got in the toy industry. And the first job I got, I hated it, man. Like, I don't know if you've ever gotten exactly what you wanted and then been so disappointed when you got there. But like, I pretended as if I knew what I was talking about. I pretended that no one was having fun. No one was playing, no high fives, no kids, nothing, man. It was just so painful. And why did they pad the walls? You know, like that just bothered me that like all these cubicle walls were padded. I was like, this is not a good sign. Like, I just don't feel like this is a safe space. So, you know, so leaving that and then finding a job where I could play for a living, you know, and I found a job on Craigslist that taught kids engineering with Lego, and they were just messing around and playing. But I helped grow it with them, and we grew it into the largest STEM organization, largest Lego-inspired STEM organization in the U.S. But we did it all by playing. Like, we had no plan. We had no business plan. We picked cities that we thought were fun. We picked people that we thought were fun. We didn't know what we were doing half the time. We experimented. We failed miserably. And then, like, Google, Adobe, and all of them were like, hey, do you do team-building events? And we're like, yeah, of course we do. No, we didn't. But we just said yes to everything. We're just playing, man. We're just playing. And then I found that the same, you know, annoyance that I felt towards that, what I thought was going to be my perfect job. Now I was at these perfect companies of Facebook, mm-hmm. Google, you know, Netflix, and they weren't playing either. They weren't taking risks. They weren't being innovative. They weren't being disruptive the way in which they claim to be on the inside. So I was like, man, mm-hmm. like I need to create an organization just getting people to play more using positive psychology and play.
Wow. What I love about that story is it's like, had a dream, check, found the perfect job, check, mm-hmm. you know, you're like checking all these boxes.
Yeah.
And then when you finally bring play, you're like, I'm just going to create my own thing now.
Right. 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 Because like the checking boxes thing, not bringing you happiness. Like, think about it. You're like in everyone's life. Like, first off, I always challenge people. Why are you planning in a linear way? Because if you look back in your life, none of it's linear. So I don't know why you're planning. And then how is checking off all those boxes? Okay, you know, I got in the college I wanted. Oh, okay, I got the job that I wanted. Yeah. Okay, I got the house and whatever. Like, each one is not bringing you the happiness or fulfillment that you always thought it would, right? And it's like, you know, if anything, I define play as any joyful act where it makes you fully present in the moment. Where there is no purpose, there is no result, right? You're fully in love with the process. Yeah. You don't have regrets about the past. You don't have anxiety about the future. You just are fully engaged right now. And how many people are like that now? Like, we're so inundated with information, we can barely focus, right? So like, when was the last time you were bored? When was the last, you know, like our most joyful, fun play moments are the thing we remember at the end of our life. We don't remember the accolades, accomplishments, how many houses we have, how much is in our bank account, all that stuff. None of that's like relevant, yet that's the stuff we're pursuing. And then when you look at people that are the most successful, right? Michael Phelps, 23 gold medals. Mm-hmm. That dude went into depression right after he got his last gold medal. So if that dude can't be happy, if Anthony Bourdain can't be happy with the best job in the world, it's not about the result, right? It's about something so much bigger than that. And it's about figuring out, how do I stay present and engaged and playing right now? Figure that out and you'll be much more fulfilled.
Yeah. That's so fabulous, because there's the perfect connection to like a podcast interview, for example, because like if you're present in the moment and really like connected with the person,
right,
all of a sudden your prepared question list goes out the gate and you're right. Locked in and having fun.
Right. And those are the best interviews, right? Like I was on like 100-something interviews last year. Yeah. The amount of stilted questions. Question number 3. So how would you incorporate play into the workplace? And it's just like, yeah, I'll answer that. But like, are you bored? Because I'm bored. Like, I don't know. Like, yeah. Are we on the same page here? Because you don't seem very engaged, you know, and I'm into this right now. You can hear it in my voice, but like, yo, come on, dude. You know, I know you've done too many of these when you're jaded like that.
I love your definition of play, where you're focused on the present moment and you're not worried about the past and you're not worrying about like that future purpose.
Yeah.
And yet I imagine that when you can like just get so present, the connection to purpose is actually quite powerful.
Oh, it's the most powerful because it's the whole Howard Thurman quote, right? Like, don't ask what the world needs, ask what makes you come alive, because what the world needs is for more people to come alive. If you think of the people that you gravitate towards most, it's when they're most alive, right? It's when they're doing their thing. I love when people nerd out about whatever, even if it's something I'm not interested in, because they're so passionate about it. All of a sudden I'm like, I like wormholes. Tell me more about wormholes, dude. Like, you are into it more than I've ever even explored this. But that's the thing, right? Like, and Steven Johnson says this thing, you'll find the future where people are having the most fun. You know, look at the, look that. Where people are gravitating towards. Where is all the fun happening? TikTok, Clubhouse, Disney Plus, Netflix, Hulu. Like if you think of the organizations or companies that thrive during 2020, it's the ones that were having fun. So like, play actually helps you be more resilient, more adaptable, able to navigate uncertainty. While meanwhile, all the companies that are like, I can't wait to get back to normal. Yo, you're the next Blockbuster, dude. Like, I'm going to be looking at your last store in Alaska in about a year.
That brings up a really interesting question of, how did you kind of bust through some of those doubts that pop up in your mind when you're going out and having fun? Or are you just not even thinking about it anymore? Are you not self-critical or self-aware of how you're showing up in these places where you're just having fun?
Yeah, I still have doubts. I still go through like the inner critic stuff. I still work with a lot of companies. Heck, I ran a workshop called Dealing with A-Holes at Work Through Play with the Department of Homeland Security. Okay, like,
oh, wow.
Talk about not the whole fun place to be at, you know, and then you're so that inner critic is showing up. But like, I also know how to play with my inner critic, right? Like, my friend Marcia Shondor taught me about naming my inner critic, and I literally named it. And here's a trick for everyone listening. If you want to address your inner critic, this is really simple. The next time you're feeling like crap, guess what? Your inner critic's been hanging out for a really long time, and it's been telling you you're a piece of shit for a while, you know? And then so what you can do is, first, write down what it's saying to you. Like, write all the mean things that it's saying to you. You suck. You'll never be enough. You know, no one loves you. You'll always be broke. Like, write it all down. Write every single thing down as it's coming into your head. And then literally think about, what does it look like, right? And what does it sound like? Mm-hmm. Is it that bully from third grade? Is it, you know, like, you know, that group of cool people in high school that were always saying, is it your aunt or uncle? Is it like a combination of your parents and a bunch of other people? Like, who is this? Like, make a character. And guess what? My character for my inner critic is Gargamel from the Smurfs, because he just sucks the joy out of everything.
Yes.
Right? I'm just going to steal all the Smurfs and y'all are having too much fun over here, you know? And then I'll literally turn to Gargamel when he's saying like, you're always going to be broken. I'm like, wait a minute, my bank account's doing pretty well, man. Oh my gosh, you're never going to be loved. Actually, I'm surrounded by people who love me. You know, like, when you start responding to Gargamel, or sometimes I'll text my best friend Dana and just be like, hey, Gargamel's speaking up right now. And when I write it out, it quiets, it gets quiet. So like, you can use play to like address really challenging, important issues, simply because you're not taking yourself so seriously. Why are adults taking themselves way too seriously? Like, come on, man. Like, at the, I really hope in the new normal, we're not having the same stupid opening question. What do you do? What do you do? What do you do for work? You know, because that communicates nothing about the person. I want to ask the question of like, what mischief are you causing? You know, like, you know, how are you flipping tables in this world? That's the stuff I'm interested in. I want you to tell me about something you're nerding out on right now. Those are the questions I'm interested in.
Oh, I love that a lot, because it's interesting. It's like, you can take, what tables are you flipping? You can take that in a host of different ways. I mean, you can connect it to like Jesus flipping the table of the money changers you know, a kid hiding under the table, hitting his head and knocking the table over and laughing hysterically.
Right.
Love that. What I appreciate about it is you start seeing the realm of possibility again. Mm-hmm. Imagination right. starts to soar.
Yes.
And yes. fun enters the picture.
Yes. I mean, and let's talk about that, right? So like, I consider play to be the opposite of perfection. And I believe perfection is rooted in shame. You know, you can't play when you feel shame. That's why the people I like hanging out with the most, pretty shameless. Like, they're just like, whatever. Like, they're the first ones on the dance floor. The first person's to like cut a joke. They're just like, they're just willing to put themselves out there. They're willing to be, you know, to go through the wall first. I really respect that. But what's actually happening in your brain when you're playing is your brain in a beta state. When it goes into a flow state, you actually go through something called hypnofrontality, where your inner critic actually starts to dissipate and your implicit mind shows up and you become highly creative and you start to see all the opportunities in front of you instead of being fixated on just one result, right? Because adults love just results. And expectations are the thief of joy. That's why so many adults were so disappointed with 2020, because they were like, 2020 is going to be my year. It's going to be the greatest year of all time. I'm going to change my life. You know, everything is happening in 2020. And then it didn't happen for them. And they're like, and instead of just letting go of that, they were like, no, it's still going to happen. You know, and it's just like, if you were able to let go of that and allow that flow state to happen, what happens next is then you get a shot of dopamine. And you start to see all of the possibilities. And you know you've experienced this when you travel and you're like, well, what do we want to do today? And it's like, we can do anything. And you just say yes to everything. You're like, yes, I will get on this moped that's dangerous. Yes, I'll go ziplining. Yes, I'll hop into this random van and go down to like a deserted island. Oh my gosh, now there's a party at that island. How did I get here? I'm under a full moon at a party and then I meet my future wife. You know, it's just like, you don't know where it is when you're open to saying yes to everything and being like, let me just play here and here, right? So play is experimentation. And what we have to ask ourselves every day with each choice we make, is this choice being driven by experimentation and play? Or is this choice being driven by shame and perfection?
And even fear. Because when you're describing these situations, being willing to just be like, yes to this, yes to this, yes to this, you're allowing your brain to almost calm down in that fight or flight kind of moment.
Absolutely. Yeah. Because shame is rooted in like, you know, I don't want to be alone. I don't want to be the only one. I don't want to look stupid, you know? And it's just like, you know, the amount of times I've looked stupid, you know, but like, whatever, like it's interesting. There's this video on YouTube of this guy that's dancing at a festival. Wow, whoa, a guy dancing at a festival, how unique, right? But he's dancing at a festival, nobody else is dancing in this whole group of like 500 people. This guy's dancing for like 10 minutes straight and people are mocking him. They're like filming him, they're like, look at that guy, must be high, blah, blah, blah. Two guys go over, start dancing with him, but they start mocking him too. But also a little of them were like, man, this guy's kind of fun, as they were dancing with him. So then they kept dancing and then a couple more people joined. And then within a minute, and it's gone viral, and now people use it on their TEDx talks to talk about movement building. At the end of the song, he had 300 people surrounding him, right? 300 people, but he was out there for 10 minutes looking like an idiot by himself. So, you know, if you really want to make an impact on the world, like do the thing that makes you come alive, regardless of what everyone else has to think, because you, how many people do you care about from high school's opinion now that you were like obsessed with, you know, back in high school, right? Like I'm always asking myself, if I don't care about this person's opinion in a year, then why am I trying to impress them? The only people I should be trying to impress are the people that love me. Yeah, and they love me already, so I don't need to impress them. So what am I trying to impress Chad over there, you know, from accounting? Who cares what Chad has to say? Chad is miserable, all right? He just doesn't even know what he wants in his life. So why am I trying to impress Chad?
Chad is addicted to Jelly Bellies right now. So, right. You know, that's where he gets enjoyment from life.
Right. Do you know when you're like when we could hang out in a restaurant and you're like laughing with a bunch of friends and your coworkers and you're having a really good time, and then someone comes over here and is like, what's all this laughing happening? People are having way too much fun over here. Who is that guy? Who is that guy? What are you doing? What are you like? What are you telling me? Just because you're not having fun, don't come over here and start pooping on our fun right now. Just because you can join in. But like, don't hate on us for being comfortable with ourselves.
What's interesting, Jeff, I almost called you Chad. That's hilarious. But what's great about it, this, Jeff, is that you're nerding out on play.
Yeah.
But underneath it all, there's all this research that you've done in applied positive psychology and studying flow and reading all these studies. I mean, is that just the next level of your nerding out?
Yeah, it is. Because it's like, I'm just fascinated. Like recently I was fascinated with the 8-hour workday. I was like, where did the 8-hour workday come from? You know, and I researched, and this guy named Robert Owen, who was both a business owner and a labor activist, a Welsh labor activist, was like in 1817 came out with the 8-hour workday, 8 hours of work, 8 hours of leisure, 8 hours of sleep. That was the logic behind it. But then basically no one touched it for like over 100 years. Some labor, you know, unions tried to implement it, but they were like denied. And then Henry Ford, at least in the US, implemented in 1926, you know, at his Ford plants, because they were going through depression and he couldn't get people to come because they were dying on the assembly line. So he was working them 12 to 8, 15 hours a day. So like he changes it to 8-hour workday. He doubles everybody's salary. People start coming back to work, right? And it's just like, but then since 1926, nothing's changed. Nothing has changed in 94 years. And recently there was a study that was done, published by Inc., that talked about how most people can't do quality work, their deep work, for more than 2 hours and 51 minutes of a given day. Yet our work day in America has increased to 8.8 hours. So it's just like, wait a minute. So we can work for 3 hours. We can do good... 3 quality hours, but we're working for 8.8. What are we doing for 5.8 hours of the day? Stupid meetings, you know, chilling, going, getting coffee, writing up the amount of reports that I've talked to people about. They make up reports to explain all the work they're doing. People are spending more time telling people about the work they're doing than actually doing the work they're doing. Like, what are we doing, right? And then so many bullshit jobs out there. So many, VP of this and VP of that, and like huge marketing departments that are like spending a majority of their time trying to persuade the rest of the company they should exist. When if you cut half of that, no one would miss them. Nobody would miss them. So, you know, so we have to be really like looking at it like, what are we actually doing? And if you're like a team leader, right? If you have staff, I would do this immediately. Reach out to your staff and ask them, what is the work that you love to do most at this job? What is your flow work or your red thread work, as Marcus Buckingham refers to it, or zone of genius work, as Gay Hendricks talks about? Because you got your zone of incompetence, things you suck at, zone of competence, things you're average at, zone of excellence, which most of us spend our time on, things we're really good at that we get praised for, but we're like, meh, about, we don't really care about it. And then zone of genius, the stuff where you forget about time, your flow work. How much flow work time are you doing, right? And when you ask your staff, you know, what do you love to do? Oh, well, I love to talk to clients. I love to connect with clients, build relationships. Oh, okay, well, let's look at your schedule right now. What percentage of time do you do that? 10%? 10%? Only 10% of that time? What? Can we increase that to 15 or 20%? Because studies show that it has a ripple effect on all of your other work. Your productivity levels go up. Your morale goes up. It shows that you as a team leader is seeing that person, and turnover goes down. So like, focus on helping them do the work that they do best. Do the flow work.
What is your zone of genius? What's your flow work?
This? Making TikTok videos? just talking about play, running workshops. I love that. Anytime I can get people out of their head and get them playing, like I'm running a workshop this weekend with a lot of people that might be a little bit stiff. And it's just like, this is going to be fun just to see if people in pantsuits, can get a little silly, even on Zoom, that excites me, because then all of a sudden they're tapping back into like this inner child that they like have forgotten about.
Yeah. It makes me think of the quote from James Victorie, what made you weird as a kid makes you great today.
Exactly. Exactly. Embrace your weird, man. Your weird is where all of the magic is. It's also really scary to embrace your weird. I get it. And also, it's so much more interesting than being normal. Normal is so overrated. At the end of your life, right? Like, I might have said this already, but like, biggest regrets of the dying. I wish I had the courage to live the life I wanted to live, right? Not the life that others expected of me. No one at the end of their life is like, man, I'm so happy I lived a normal life. When you go to a funeral, my dad passed away in 2015. If you think of when I thought of the best moments I had with him, they were fun, joy, play moments. So why wouldn't it wasn't about his accolades or all the things that he accomplished, but it was just like those joyful moments. So why wouldn't I be focused more on pursuing those fun, joy, play moments? That's why I made this fun, joy, play index instead of resolutions, because I don't believe in them. Because it's all about like reflect back on 2020, even during that most painful of years, and think about what was my most awe-inspiring moment? When did I laugh the most and who was I with? When could I just not stop smiling? What are my favorite moments of each month of last year? Just look back at that stuff. And as you're looking back at it, you're going to be like, oh yeah, I love doing that. I'm going to do more of that in 2021. And then you just start committing to that. One of my favorite moments was doing tipsy storms with my colleague and friend Lauren Yee, where we would get a little tipsy and then do a little brainstorming. And we were like, we're doing more of those in 2021. Guess what? We're doing more of those. That's happening already.
What happens in that moment when you're a little tipsy and you're brainstorming? What's happening in your brain other than happiness?
Well, it's just like you've shut down your inhibitions, right? I was hanging out with my friend Humaira, Angie, and Paul Socket. He was in Jurassic World, just made a video about him. We were brainstorming while getting tipsy. We were like just brainstorming, like, what do we want to do next in our lives? Like, ooh, you want to get on Oprah? Hey, let's figure out how we can figure that out, right? Like, we're just coming up with all these crazy ideas. It was like a 6-hour conversation, man. It was like, it just kept going and going. It was just like, man, when you're fully engaged, it's so good. You just feel so alive. That's going to be, just knowing I had that conversation with them is going to be one of the joyous moments that I'm going to reflect back on when I'm in 2022.
I love that. I love that so much, because what it's saying to me is that we are so underestimating and undervaluing the mere act of play and enjoying ourselves.
Yes. Yes. And what's behind it, right? It's like Will Smith when he leaped out of that helicopter and bungee jumped in the Grand Canyon. He was like, on the opposite side of fear, man, is everything. Everything you've always wanted. All those dreams, all that stuff you want. It's so interesting. Because people talk about like, I want to make an impact on this world. I want to leave a legacy. I want to do something that's powerful before I leave this planet. And it's just like, just do the thing that, embrace your weird. Just do the thing that makes you come most alive. If you do that, the ripple effect is like astronomical on everything else. But as long as we are just playing small, right? As long as we're like pretending like, well, I don't want to rock the boat too much. I don't think anyone wants to hear my opinion. Who cares if people don't want to hear your opinion? Give your opinion anyway. Give your freaking opinion anyway. And I'll give you a perfect example, right? Of like this. Do you know the guy that blew up on TikTok when he drank the cranberry juice?
No.
Do you remember that? Do you know that guy? Okay. Anyway, there was this guy on TikTok. I think he might have been even homeless, you know, and he made this video where he's like riding on his skateboard and he's drinking Schweppes cranberry juice while like playing some like song. Just like it's 15 seconds. It's nothing. Right. But he's just having, he's just, you just know he's in sheer glee, sheer glee. So many people redid that video, and even the creator of that song redid that video.
Oh, wow.
That this guy got sponsorships. He was able to pay for a house for like $300,000 cash. Now he's like an influencer. And what was he doing? He was just doing his glee. He was just pursuing his joy. It was a thing that just brings him happiness. He likes to dance in front of the camera and act all ridiculous, and people love him for that. There's this guy named Axel Mansour who hopped on Clubhouse recently, you know, in the last month or so, and was like, he would go into the big rooms where like there's a lot of like a lot of ego, a lot of mansplaining, a lot of like, look at me and my $1.5 million. Do you want to have $1.5 million? I have $1.5 million. Yeah, I get it, dude. But he would go in all these rooms and he was like, these rooms are not for me. Like, they're just, they just don't resonate with me. So I think I'm just going to come on, hop on this app, and I'm just going to come on between 10 p.m. and like midnight. And because I'm a musician, I'm just going to play music and I'm going to call it the lullaby room. And, you know, people can fall asleep to my music. That's cool. You know, maybe I'll talk and I'll do other things.
Brilliant.
It became the most popular room on Clubhouse. Put so many people appreciated because they would do it consistently every night of the week for like the last month, last 2 months. He just became the icon on Clubhouse. He is now the photo when you download the app. It's him. And when they asked him, like, why, what did he do? And he was just like, I just pursued my joy. I just pursued the thing that brought me happiness. And look what happens when you do that.
Amazing. It's funny because as you're describing like the fun projects, the things that bring you to life, I was flashing back to a project that I did probably 6, 7, 8 years ago. And it was a guy who created these rock and roll inspired t-shirts. And he wanted to do a kind of runway model show.
Right.
And he hired me to create the soundtrack for it. Because he knew I loved metal and that I could play it.
Yeah.
And he was in my space and we're just kind of throwing ideas out. And I just said out of the blue, I said, what if we started with a Thunderstrike and then go into a riff from Slayer's Reign in Blood and then go into the kind of hip hop, you know, metal beat.
Yeah.
And he's like, let's try it. And it was so fun to just do it.
Yes, right? And just you describing it, I'm getting excited. I don't even like heavy metal, but I want to hear that song. You see what I'm saying? Like, we gravitate towards people that are alive and having the most fun, man.
Yeah.
This is why people listen to your podcast. And they don't listen to other people's podcasts because they feel it coming from you. They hear it in your voice. Mm-hmm. You can't hide that, right? You can't manufacture that. Whenever I hear people being like, well, you got to be more authentic. It's all about being authentic nowadays. It's just like, fuck you, dude. Like, you just saying that is so inauthentic. You saying to be authentic. Like, I already know you're not. I already don't trust you.
If you go back and listen to some of the earlier episodes where I was trying to be authentic, I just sounded like a used car salesman.
Right. Hey, this is Chris Martin here, a podcast. Hey.
Whoa, you listened to the early episodes. That's awesome. So there was something that I read that just had me going, what in the world is this? But you are certified in laughter yoga?
Oh, yo.
What is that?
So this is interesting. So first off, anyone can get certified in laughter yoga. It takes 2 days. But but what's fascinating, but laughter yoga is actually really interesting, the origins of it, right? So the creator of laughter yoga, he's a physician. And he found that his patients would go home earlier from the hospital if they laughed more. So he was just like, dude, this laughter thing actually heals people. I got to test this out more. And in India, there's so many people always out, right? Except for maybe during the pandemic, you know. So he would go to the park where people are just hanging around and he would just start telling jokes and then afterwards ask people if they felt better. And they did. And he did this for like 2-3 days. And then he ran out of jokes because he's not a good comedian. So it's just like after a while, I was like, yeah, these jokes kind of suck, dude. You know, so he goes, wait. Just come back tomorrow. I'll have something. So he goes back to his wife, who's like a yogi, like not just a yoga practitioner, but like a yogi. And she's like, you know, what are you doing? She's like, well, I'm getting people to laugh. I want them to laugh more. And she goes, are you having them breathe when they laugh? And he goes, what? No. And he's just like, you need to have them breathe and laugh. Like they got to do both. And he's like, well, what about the jokes thing? I don't have any more jokes. And she's like, you don't have to have jokes. Just start laughing. Even if it's like fake laugh, because that fake laughter actually turns into real laughter. And so you go through these waves in laughter yoga of laughing, and first it starts, and then all of a sudden someone actually laughs for real. Then you're like, and then you go into these waves of laughter, and then you pause, and then you breathe, and then you practice breathing, and then you breathe a little bit, and then you go back into laughing again. And man, I mean, people that I don't even know, people that don't even speak my language, I've been in groups with them where we're laughing together and I feel more connected to them than with some people I've been like working with for years. So like that's laughter yoga. It's like this cathartic way of just like releasing toxicity through laughter.
Oh, that's brilliant. And it's funny because once you described it and you were modeling the different laughs, like I found that I was laughing and then I reminded myself to breathe.
Right. And we even do this like laugh circle near the end where like you just keep laughing and there's always someone that has that, you know, that weird laugh that you're like, and you're like, oh my goodness, I can't. And then you like, can't stop. You're like, ah, oh my gosh. And one of my favorite moments, it's so crazy I'm going to say this, one of my favorite moments of 2018, I can't even believe I'm referencing it, was when I was sitting with two of my friends, this is before I took laughter yoga, and we were just joking and just like making fun of each other and whatever. We laughed for like an hour and a half. We were like hurting. We were on the floor, you know, like with like lungs almost, you know, punctured. And it was like, it just was so good. It was just so good. It's probably going to be one of my favorite moments of my life.
I always love it when you're watching a comedy show and there's always that laugh right by the microphone and you can tell the host is distracted by it too.
Right. You're like, what is that?
So inevitably the question becomes, how can people pull the stick out of their ass and have more fun?
Sure. So there's a few ways. One I learned from my play mentor, Gwen Gordon, that talked about how you can't play until you soothe yourself, until like you calm yourself down and you actually adopt your nervous system from the person that took care of you the most like that, you know, so you learn how to calm yourself from that person. So you have to first identify, okay, how do they calm themselves down? And like, is that healthy? Right. And then it's just like, because you can't play when you're in an anxiety ridden state. You can't play when you feel shame or feel fear. You just can't. You see that with kids all the time. When they hurt themselves, they run back, you know, to their parents. And then when they feel comfortable enough, then they go back out. Right. So you have to identify what actually soothes or calms you. When I take showers, that's when I get a flood of ideas. When I'm like dancing in my house, I get a flood of ideas. When I go walking, you know, or just like, or I'm doing morning pages, I get a flood of ideas. So identify what is the thing that first calms or soothes you. And then the next thing you do, which is so difficult in this day and age, is get bored. And what I mean by get bored is I mean turn off Netflix, stop binge watching, you know, Netflix for a little bit, stop looking at social media. And I'm not talking about for the whole day or even 2 days. I'm talking about for 1 hour. And if you're like, well, I don't have time, look at your phone. Your phone tracks how much time you're on it. You're on your phone 4 hours a day. You got time. You can find some time. You can find 30 minutes to an hour. And remember, like, even when I'm making TikTok videos, when I watch a lot of TikTok videos before I make, I can't make anymore because I just think, oh, the world's ideas are already out in there. And they're all out in the world and I can't, I have nothing, right? But when I'm able to get bored, think about when you were a kid. That's when you had your craziest, best ideas. Also your most dangerous ideas, but also your weirdest ideas. So when you actually get bored and get super quiet, all of a sudden that inner child starts to whisper to you and starts saying things that are like both exciting and scary, right? Like start a podcast, create that video, email that person you've been wanting to email forever, you know, reach out to that person you like whatever that thing is, and you follow that curiosity and you see what happens. You know, this year I've made a pact, and I don't do this all the time, but I'm trying to take a risk a day. Like, and I get it from We Bought a Zoo, from, you know, that movie We Bought a Zoo, because like 20 seconds of, you know, 20 seconds of insane courage. All you need is 20 seconds of sheer bravery and everything can change. So to think that you have a choice at that moment to either, as Viola Davis says, claim who you are or chase your worth. I want to claim who I am. I want to claim like my nerdy, weird self. And when I'm doing that and following that curiosity, it's going to take you on an adventure that you never thought was possible.
It reminds me of the book Rejection Proof, the guy who did all of the challenges, like going to Krispy Kreme and having them make a special donut.
Exactly, right.
You know, all that.
With Olympic Krispy, right. And then here, if that one, you're like, well, you know, I could do that one. Here's the other one you could do with your friends. Reach out to your friends, 3 to 5 of your closest friends. Call them up. Oh, I know that's hard. Call them up or get on Zoom with them and ask them these two questions. What value do I bring to your life? Like, why are we friends? Like, what do I do for you? Like, why, you know, what do I do? Well, why do you like me? Right? Because a lot of times we forget what value we bring to people's lives. And then the second question is, when have you seen me most alive? And another way of asking that is like, when have you seen me most playful, most creative, most weird, most myself, right? Most myself. Mm-hmm. So what value do I bring to your life? And when have you seen me most alive? Ask that to 3 of the 5 of your closest people in your life. And just look at the answers that they come up with. And you're like, whoa, I do that for you? Whoa, that is a way in which I'm most alive. Oh, man. And you start getting it. You write it all down. And you're like, and then you reach back out to them and you go, hey, help me to play more in this one way. Like pick out the way that really resonates with you or something you haven't done in a really long time and just start pursuing that. And again, follow your curiosity. Don't be fixated on the result, right? And just go on that hobbit adventure and see where it takes you.
great tie-in with our earlier conversation around nose hairs.
Yeah.
There's something about hobbits and nose hair. So what was the last maybe book or movie that just cracked you up and really brought out that sense of play and fun in you?
Ooh, that's a good question. The last movie that, I guess the last book that cracked it open for me was Gay Hendricks' Big Leap. He talks a lot about the upper limit, how you reach a certain level of happiness and then you self-sabotage. Like you literally like destroy yourself. Like they talk about that with lotto winners. Like let's say you've made $20,000 a year and then all of a sudden you have $5 million in the bank. You will spend all of that money to get back down to 20,000 because you're just not comfortable being up there. Like that's self-sabotage. Countries do that. They go to war every decade because they're like, it's just too good right now, you know, or let's pick a president that's really bad for us, you know, because it's just been too good. No, so we self-sabotage. So like that was really interesting, exploring that upper limit and being like, where is my happiness? And he also talked about zone of genius, right? Which I brought up earlier of like, what is my ikigai? What is the thing that I'm like meant to do in the world? But also it's just so exciting and just like is, you know, like gets me so amped to wake up in the morning, right? And yeah. The other thing, oh, I'll say this too, Elizabeth Gilbert's Big Magic. In Elizabeth Gilbert's Big Magic, she says two things that I just freaking love. One of them is personal transformation doesn't happen until you get tired of your own bullshit, right? My bullshit I was telling myself was I don't have time to make videos. I look stupid in front of a camera. I would tell myself that back in March of 2020. And then I was like, well, I don't have time. And then quarantine happened. I was like, guess what, Jeff? You have all the time in the world. Good luck. You know, and then I just had to be called myself on my own bullshit. And I ended up making like 150 videos between March and the end of the year. And they were like 1 minute videos. There was like nothing, right? And I realized it wasn't that big of a deal. But the other thing that she said that was freaking just dope is she talks about genius. And she talks about, I think it's an Irish folklore, how, you know, no one's a genius, right? No individual is a genius, but genius visits you. Genius ideas visit you almost like a muse, and you either birth them, you either create them, or they have to move on to someone else. So the next time anytime you've had an idea and then you haven't made it, and then someone makes an idea that just bastardizes your idea, and you're like, oh, that's so stupid. They stole my idea. Guess what? The genius visited you. You didn't make it, and it had to go on to somewhere else. So now when ideas visit me, I'm like, man, I either have to make this video right now, or I have to let it go. Because it's not for me. I have to, you know, write this blog post, or I have to create this new workshop because it's visiting me right now. And that's gotten so many of my creative, you know, juices flowing, because I'm like, it's only going to be here for a certain period of time. And it's blessing me that it's visiting me. But, you know, I have to respect it enough to create it, or I have to be okay with letting it go.
I love that so much, because I think that's the one thing that I think holds a lot of people back from doing things is not being okay with an idea moving on.
Yeah. And when you do, I was talking to my friend Angie Cole, and you know, she's like thriving in our business, but she doesn't have a to-do list. She doesn't, you know, go by any of the standard ways of doing business practices. She just follows her intuition, right? You know, she follows a lot of things, like, you know, she talks a lot about masculine and feminine leadership. Masculine leadership's like, we got to destroy. We got to get the to-do list done. We got to do all this stuff. Well, actually, a lot of feminine leadership is curiosity, empathy, play. Like, if you look at the New Zealand Prime Minister, right? Mm-hmm. Lowest COVID rates in the world, she leads from both a feminine and masculine energy place. And that's why she's able to do what she does. So like, you know, Angie will just be like, I just trust my intuition, and I trust it enough that it's going to guide me in the right direction. A friend of mine who's like this prolific author was just like, yeah, I just know and trust that the book will get done. I don't know how I'm going to get there, but I've written enough books now that I trust myself that it will weave its way through creativity. And as long as I'm following my creative side and my intuition side and not leaning on my rational mind, because my rational mind is not there for creativity's sake, it's there for survival. The more I'm listening to my intuition and my inner child, the more it's going to guide me to where I really need to be. And I just need to be patient enough to listen and get bored enough to follow it.
So good.
I'm going to put on my traditional interviewer hat here and ask you one final question.
Get that interviewer hat on there. Wait, hold on. Let me get my interviewer hat on. Right. Okay, wait. All right. Okay, I'm ready. I'm ready to listen to you.
Okay. My final question for you, Jeff, is this. What is your favorite name to drop?
Oh, wait, that I know? Like someone's named?
Yeah, so you know, it's like, oh, I know this person.
Yeah, this is going to be a longer answer than you might expect. So first off, I don't understand, like, when someone takes a picture with a celebrity and then you, like, take the photo, like, are you more valuable now than you are next to a celebrity? Like that just doesn't make sense to me. Look, look at this. This is Madonna. I knew Madonna for 4 seconds. I now have more value than you. That's kind of how I feel a lot of times. But if I was to talk about a name that I love to drop, it's going to have to be my friend Paul Sockett, who I just made a video about. He was in Jurassic World in the background, by the way. In the background, he was mercenary. He was Bearded Mercenary 59. That was what he told me. That was his name. He was Bearded Mercenary 59. But like, I made a whole video about him. Go watch it on my TikTok or Instagram. And it's just like, last night I rented Jurassic Park or Jurassic World. Not a very good movie, by the way. But like, I rented it just to find him. The whole goal was just to find him. And every time I found him, I would be like, Paul Sockett, Paul Sockett, Paul Sockett, do you see him? He's right there. The redhead, the redhead. So watch my TikTok. That literally is what. So that's the name I've been dropping. Maybe no one else knows that name, but I know that name. Paul Sockett, English actor, phenomenal. Oh my goodness! I can't wait to share this episode and be like, Paul, just listen to the last part of this because you're gonna love it.
Oh, Jeff, this is so fantastic.
Oh wait, so can I do one last thing before I go?
Please do.
All right, so I'm going to Goodwill Hunt your guests. Okay, so you know Goodwill Hunting, right?
Yes.
Do you remember that construction scene at the end?
I'm trying to remember. It's been a while.
Okay, so I'll remind you. So you know, for anyone that hasn't seen the movie, Matt Damon, his character is a genius. He can have any job he wants at any think tank like in the world, right? And Ben Affleck, his best friend, is not a genius. He works construction. And they're at a construction site at the end of the movie, both working construction. And Ben turns to him and he's just like, yo, when are you going to take one of these high paying jobs? Right. And Matt's like, I'm not, you know, I'm going to work construction. And, you know, we're going to raise our kids together and we're going to take them to Foley Field. And, you know, that's just what I'm going to do. And Ben turns to him and he goes, if I see you here in 20 years, I'm going to fucking kill you. I'm going to fucking kill you. And Matt's like, what? I owe it to myself. And he's like, fuck you. You don't owe it to yourself. You owe it to me because I'm going to be here in 20 years. And I'm okay with that. But you are sitting on a winning lottery ticket and you're too scared to cash that in. And for like every one of your listeners, you're sitting on a freaking lottery ticket. It's that weird thing about you, right? It's the thing that makes you come alive and you need to cash it in, but not for you. This is not about you. It's not about you. It's the fact that someone is waiting for you to show up and do the thing that makes you come alive so they can do the thing that makes them come alive. If Chris does not take a risk and do 438 episodes of this and embraces weird, I can't show up because he took that risk, because he embraced his weird, because he cashed in on his lottery ticket, that's the only reason I'm here now, right? So now you're hearing this and you need to show up to give permission for all these other people to show up. And if you want to have an impact on the world, if you want to change the world, simply do the thing that makes you come most alive because people are waiting for you to do that. So my question to your audience is, are you ready to show up?
I definitely do not want to take away from the importance and weight of Jeff's final message. So I just want to reemphasize the question that he asked. Are you ready to show up for the benefit of others? And if not, what are you waiting for? Until next time, may creativity and curiosity fuel your life.